You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On Rooms. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day. Happy second day of the NBA play-in games. I'm going to talk a little bit here about the Tuesday games, preview the Wednesday games very briefly, and then look at a couple of key Timberwolves notes off the top related to coaching and the coaching staff heading into next season. Very early news out of Minnesota regarding who will not be back on the Timberwolves, on Chris Finch's staff, I should say. And then also a quick look at a couple of player previews. I want to start with Jalen Noel. I want to talk a little bit about his season, what we've seen or what we saw in year two of his NBA career. And he'll be the first player we discuss. And then also a look at Jarrett Culver's season, obviously an abbreviated campaign for him related because of the injuries. But still want to talk about what he did in year two of his NBA career and what to expect this offseason for him as we start the player review and player grade series. Before we get to all that, though, a quick reminder, you can follow this show anywhere you listen to podcasts. That includes Apple, Google, Spotify, and of course, the all new Odyssey app. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. And also at B Beacon. That's B Beacon, two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Okay. First, NBA play-in games on Tuesday. The first game was Hornets-Pacers. The Pacers led this game by double digits nearly from start to finish. They were up 16 after the first quarter. They were up 24 at halftime. This thing was basically over. Caris LeVert didn't play due to health and safety protocols, but it was not a close game. I mean, I don't know really what else to say about it. It was a blowout. So now the Pacers, that was winning the 9-10 game against the 32-39 Hornets. The Pacers get the right then to play the winner of the the loser of the Wizards-Celtics game, which was the Wizards. The Wizards competed a little bit in the first half. They were actually up 2 points at halftime, but Boston pulled away in the third quarter, ultimately won, going away by 18. That means that Boston will be the seventh seed. The Wizards will have to beat the Pacers in the final playing game in the East in order to earn the eighth seed and the right to play the number one seeded Philadelphia 76ers in the East. The Western Conference games, of course, are this evening on Wednesday. So we'll talk a little bit about that what happens in those on Thursday show. But of course, those two matchups are the first game on ESPN is San Antonio and Memphis, and then followed by Golden State and Los Angeles. So the Lakers, of course. So we'll talk about those games on Thursday and what comes of those and what to look forward to in the final Western Conference game here later this week as well for the right to earn the eighth seed in the West. So not really what the NBA was looking for in terms of drama with the play-in games on Tuesday. That's not necessarily the NBA's fault. But when you have two below 500 teams playing, or I should say two below 500 teams winning in those play-in games, what do you expect? I mean, all four of the teams participating were 500 or worse. Now, that's the Eastern Conference. The Western Conference should at least, in theory, be more competitive. You're talking about three of the four teams participating in the Western Conference being above 500, and you've got last year's Rookie of the Year in Ja Morant. You've got, of course, Steph Curry and the Warriors, as well as LeBron and the Lakers. So the Western Conference games are far sexier than what we saw in the East on Tuesday. Still, though, the Spurs are six games below 500 heading into the series. So, it feels a little like the 500 team in baseball that's in the wild card game. Understand why the 7-9 division winner in the NFL playoffs, or 7-9 wild card winner, I guess, most recently the NFL playoffs. Understand why the NBA is doing it. I've been on record as saying I like the idea of the play-in. I also thought the Timberwolves would be in the play-in this year and still feel like they would have been had the team been relatively healthy this year. But still, seeing four 500 and below teams play on Tuesday in what is billed as a playoff game or two different playoff games was a little bit disconcerting, is maybe not the right term to use, but it was not super pretty, given we had a couple of blowouts. But anyway, hopefully the basketball on Wednesday night's better. We'll talk about it on Thursday's show. Another quick note here off the top. This is significant and not much else to say about it, but just kind of passing along the news if you missed it. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported that both David Vanterpool, the Timberwolves' associate head coach and defensive coordinator for the last couple of seasons, and Brian Gates would not return for Chris Finch's staff next season. Of course, Vanterpool was Terry Stotts' lead assistant in Portland for several years, was their defensive coordinator, was brought over by Ryan Saunders, and was apparently the runner-up to the job that Saunders ultimately got. Vanterpool, as the associate head coach, was not seriously considered, or at least not interviewed, you know, beyond. Of course, he was interviewed a couple of off seasons ago when Saunders was ultimately hired. When Saunders was fired this year, the Timberwolves and Gerson Rosas immediately hired Chris Finch of the Toronto Raptors at the time and did not apparently re-interview Vanterpool, Pablo Prigioni, or other potential head coach candidates, and instead just straight up hired Chris Finch. Of course, there was some consternation around the NBA about Vanterpool not getting the interview, etc. Rosas's argument was, hey, we interviewed him 18 months ago. This is the direction we chose to go, etc. Well, now Vanterpool, which is not a big surprise, is moving on. Of course, he was not handpicked by Chris Finch to be on his staff. He was picked by Saunders. Vanterpool's had multiple opportunities to interview for head coach jobs in recent years, including Cleveland, Indiana, and others. So he will no doubt receive consideration from other organizations for head coaching jobs that become available. You know, widely speculated Nate Bjorklund of the Indiana Pacers, who of course are still playing. He has apparently maybe not lost the locker room, but has not had a fantastic tenure for the Pacers. Of course, he's dealt with a lot of injuries, but there's a chance he's not back. There's of course other openings around the league that could come available. Sacramento said they're going to bring back Luke Walton, but undoubtedly there's going to be some openings once this campaign is all said and done. And if Vanterpool doesn't get a head job, he's certainly going to be in the running for an associate job elsewhere. It does make sense. Chris Finch is going to want to handpick his own guy. But we don't know what that's going to look like yet. Now, there's no other news. Brian Gates, of course, was back in Minnesota for a second stint. He was on the Flip Saunders staff prior to Saunders' untimely passing and the hiring of Tom Thibodeau, and had left for Sacramento, had been bounced around a little bit a long time ago. He was in New Orleans when Anthony Davis was there, was thought to be somebody that could help develop Karl-Anthony Towns on the defensive end of the floor. He came back when Ryan Saunders was hired in 2019, and this was his second year back in Minnesota. Now he'll be elsewhere next year. So tough to see B. Gates go again, but understandably, again, Chris Finch is going to want to hire his own staff. It was always a little awkward that he showed up midseason and just kind of rolled with the staff. Nobody was let go. Remember when Tom Thibodeau was fired, Andy Greer was let go, among others. A couple of guys were let go at the time. But this time around, Gerson Rosas told Ryan Saunders, hey, you know, well, I guess Rosas wasn't the one that fired Tom Thibodeau, but Rosas told Chris Finch, rather, keep the guys on the staff, whatever, let's roll, let's play out the rest of the season and see how things go. So we'll see who Finch hires. Of course, if that news breaks, we'll talk about it on the show, and curious to see who the new potential associate head coach could be. As far as this news goes, there's nothing about Pablo Prigioni or others. And as far as I'm concerned, Prigioni could still very well be on the staff next year, potentially as the offensive coordinator again, or maybe just the associate head coach by himself. We'll see. But, you know, undoubtedly, there will be some additional news related to the Timberwolves coaching staff here moving forward. Okay, next, what I want to do is I want to talk about a couple of player profiles for the season, player reviews. First, I want to hit Jalen Noel. I'm really intrigued by his season and by his future. If you've listened to the show for some time, you know that I'm a big Jalen Noel fan. So I want to talk about what we learned from his season and what to expect from him moving forward. And then I want to talk about Jarrett Culver and his abbreviated season as well. First, though, let's talk about our friends at Locker Room. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Locker Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. Locker Room is the perfect place to start or join conversations about the league. You'll find fans just like you on Locker Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to big news or rumors. You can even find Locked On hosts across, of course, the NBA, MLB, and NHL. I'll be joining the app soon, so be sure to get started. I'll meet you there. Go download the free, 100% free Locker Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the MLB, NBA, NFL, or NHL group for the latest league updates. I know you'll find a ton of incredible rooms around your favorite teams and leagues. I can't wait to join you on the app. I'll be sure to let you know once the Locked On Wolves room is live. Download the Locker Room app today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. All right, let's talk about Jalen Noel. Jalen Noel, of course, was the Wolves' second round pick in 2019. So this was year two of his NBA career. And basically what I want to do is I want to talk through what he did this season, his numbers, the outlook on him moving forward for the roster, and if he's going to be on the team next year, if he is, what his role might be. And I mean, Jalen Noel still gets somewhat of an incomplete. I'm going to give him an actual grade because that's what the segment is. I'm going to give him a grade at the end of this. I think we saw a lot from Jalen Noel, but we didn't see much as a rookie. So it's hard to say how much he grew, right? He only played 15 NBA games as a rookie. He played quite a bit in the G League. This year, he played 42 total games. He was not in the rotation at the start of the year. He got into the rotation at the very last week of January, was fantastic for parts of February and especially early March, then had a bruised leg, a severely bruised leg, missed a handful of games, came back for a couple, went back out for a little while, said he came back too soon, and then finished the season kind of sort of on the fringes of the Timberwolves rotation. But really, we saw this peak Jalen Noel sometime in early to mid-March, and he was very good during that time frame. Going back to his rookie year, in just 15 games at the NBA level, he shot only 11% from three-point range, which of course is not what Jalen Noel is capable of doing. He shot 3 of 26 at the NBA level. Look at what he did in the G League, though, and also what he did in college, and we know that he can score the basketball, right? So last season with the Iowa Wolves, he started 26 games, averaged 33 minutes a game, scored 21 points a game, and shot 43.6% from three-point range last year for the Iowa Wolves. That's on 7 attempts per game. So it's not a very small sample size. It's a legit sample size. 26 games, 7 attempts per game, 43.6%. And in total, that's 181 attempts. So Not like a painfully small sample size. Go back to what he did in college. He shot 44.1% in his final season at Washington. He was the Pac-12 player of the year. We know that Jalen Noel can shoot the basketball. So don't be fooled by his career NBA three-point shooting percentage of 30.1%. He was, 3 of 26 as a rookie in the NBA. This year, he was 50 for 150. That's 33.3%. But up until his leg injury, he was at about 36%. It was like 35.6, 35.7% up until the leg injury in early April. And he missed like 12 out of 14 games, I think it was. And from that point forward, he just wasn't himself. And so if we take that number, and it's not unreasonable to say he's a 36% three-point shooter at the NBA level because that's where he was pre-injury. Remember, he's 44% in the G League, 44% in college. So he's certainly not a 30% three-point shooter like he has been for his NBA career in two seasons. That's a combined 57 games. That's only 176 attempts. We know he's better than that, right? So call it 36-ish percent, 37%. This is a really good offensive player. He's fantastic from the mid-range. He shoots quite a bit from the elbows. You look at his shooting percentage from 10 to 16 feet. He shot 61.9% from that range this year. He doesn't shoot a ton from 16 feet out to the three-point line, which is good, but he's 42% from there. We know that Jalen Noel can score the basketball elbows, really 10 feet outside to the three-point line. The problem for him, 100% his problem, is defense. And I guess consistency on offense. Clearly, in 57 NBA games, he has not shot the three well, but we know that he can shoot the three based on his past track record in the G League and college. So the biggest issue is offensive consistency, you know, avoiding turnovers, shooting the ball well on a consistent basis. But the main issue is defense. He was a sieve defensively. If you look at, this is just one metric, but it's, in my opinion, the best. If you're going to pick one metric, if you could only pick one metric for the rest of time to encapsulate what a player can and can't do on the court, and which would be dumb if that was the case, but that's the exercise here. If you could pick one metric, it's probably ESPN Real Plus Minus at this point, because it gives a really good sense for, it attempts to account for some of the noise that the teammates around a given player make, right? It approximates the impact that those players have and is supposed to give you a better sense for individual performance. And Jalen Noel ranked 113th out of 116 shooting guards in ESPN's defensive real plus minus metric. So only three shooting guards in the entire NBA ranked lower than Jalen Noel out of 116 in terms of defensive real plus minus. And the eye test it confirms that, right? If you watch Jalen Noel play one-on-one defense, he did not provide much resistance. He was non-existent as an off-ball defender, as a help defender. And it's very clear that that was a major issue for Jalen Noel this year. That's the primary issue that's keeping him from being a kind of a sixth man microwave style scorer. I wrote about him for Dunking with Wolves, and that's what I called him, was a microwave style scorer who can come in, hit a bunch of elbow jumpers, hit a bunch of threes. He plays in a different way than a Jamal Crawford, but that type of a player. And I truly believe his offensive game is dynamic enough that he could be, and I've talked about this back, especially in March when he was playing extremely well. Jalen Noel has the ability to be a rotation caliber score first guard wing player who's maybe your sixth or seventh guy and can provide something resembling something close to league average defense, provide some resistance on the defensive end of the floor, then he's a valuable player. He's probably not a starter. He doesn't have quite the size, certainly to play the three or to defend the defensive chops to play consistently at the two. But off the bench, he could be your third or fourth wing or guard who can handle the ball a little bit with the second unit, distribute a little bit, but really his focus is going to be scoring. He has that ability, and he could do that for the Timberwolves. And his contract's a bargain. He's owed under $2 million each of the next two seasons, partially guaranteed. Remember, he signed that partially guaranteed four-year deal as a second-round pick prior to last season, the 19-20 season. So I think almost 100% he's on the team next year. He's going to have a shot at winning that sixth, seventh man type role. Now, we don't know what happens with D'Angelo Russell, Ricky Rubio, Malik Beasley, et cetera, but he's going to be ahead of, say, like a Jake Layman on the depth chart or Jarrett Culver on the depth chart heading into next year because of how dynamic he is offensively. If he can provide some semblance of defense and some consistency on offense, he's going to have every shot to win a rotation role, even if it starts as only 10, 12, 14 minutes a game. But if one of those guys, aforementioned guys, goes down, or say a Ricky Rubio gets traded, Jalen Noel is going to have every opportunity to be a key rotation player for this team moving forward. And I believe that his upside is that of a sixth man of the year type scorer. I think he's got that amount of scoring ability. The question is, can he defend enough to stay on the floor? And can he perform with some consistency? He's got, you know, certainly another year to do it. If he shoots 30% again next year at the NBA 3-point line, or 32%, 33%, then, I mean, quickly his opportunities are going to start running short. But the upside is there. The potential is there. And I think he could be a really valuable piece for this team, especially given how affordable he is from a contract perspective and how much of a bargain he's going to be moving forward. So a solid year for Jalen Noel. I gave him a B+ in terms of a letter grade, because when he played, he was very good pre-injury. The defense was an issue. Post-injury, he was not good. But the peak for him was very exciting. And he was a starting, you know, played like a starter for a stretch there for a couple of weeks. So I gave him a B+, and next year's obviously make or break for him. He's not going to be traded because he's worth too much based on how affordable and what a steal his contract is. But, you know, he's got another year with the Timberwolves to prove what he can do moving forward. If he gets an extension a year down the road, if he's somebody who could be trade bait because he performs so well next year, all those things are possible, but I'm excited to see what he can do here with the Wolves moving forward. Okay. Next, what I want to do is talk about Jarrett Culver in what was certainly a disappointing year for last year's number six overall pick, the 2019 sixth overall pick. So let's talk about his abbreviated season, what expectations could be very, very early, obviously looking ahead to 2021, 2022. Before we do that though, let's talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar of all time, hands down, no questions asked. It tastes exactly like a candy bar. You won't even know you're eating a protein bar. There's 9 delicious flavors to choose from. Coconut and coconut almond are my two favorites right now, but I also have talked up, if you've listened to the show, I've talked up mint brownie, I've talked up salted caramel. Really, there's something for everyone. If you haven't tried all the flavors, though, you can get a mixed box. You'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors, and then you can decide from there what your favorite is and order a full box of whatever that is. Most of the flavors have only 4 grams of sugar, 130 calories, but they have 17 grams of protein and only 4 grams net carbs. You can order today, get whatever flavor you like. You can go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your first order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Hey, let's also talk about betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Remember when Jarrett Culver was supposed to be the resurgent player of the 2020-2021 season? And the talk last offseason was of the which sounds so ridiculous then and even especially now, the Zoom shooting sessions with Pablo Prigioni, the Zoom calls with Kevin Hansen, you know, the Timberwolves developmental coach, and other coaches, Ryan Saunders, talking about Jarrett Culver improving his game in the offseason. He had rented a house in the Twin Cities with his own basketball court, et cetera. And not to make light of it, obviously great that Jarrett Culver was putting in the work, but the season started and we did not see the fruits of that labor on the court. His shooting motion quickly looked very much the same, kind of herky-jerky, unnatural, like there was just a weird hitch to it. And the shooting was actually worse for Jarrett Culver than it was as a rookie. And even worse, well, maybe not worse, but equally as bad, he was a solid defender as a rookie. And honestly, the defense almost appeared to vanish along with any semblance of offense that he had. This was just a bad season for Jarrett Culver. He started the year in the rotation. He became a starter after Towns' injury, basically, like a couple games after Towns' injury. The Ryan Saunders refigured the starting lineup, and he was a starter for a bit. But go back to the start of the season, he put up a 10-10, a double-double in the opening night game against the Pistons. 10 points, 10 rebounds, and you know, got to the free throw line, made 4 of 5 free throws. Remember, he was a terrible free throw shooter as a rookie, and everything seemed to be right with the world. Then against Utah a couple nights later, he put up 14.6 rebounds, shot 5 of 7 from the floor, 3 of 3 outside the arc. And it seemed as though Jarrett Culver was going to be a legitimate rotation player, played roughly 20 minutes in each of those first two games. Towns gets hurt. Culver plays 30 minutes against the Lakers, scores 8 points, has 4 rebounds. Okay, fine. He was 0-4 outside the arc, but maybe it's a blip. The next game out against the Clippers, he shoots 0-10 from the floor, including 0-3 outside the arc, 0 points, does pull down 10 rebounds. So now at least through 4 games, we're seeing a little bit of scoring, a lot of rebounding. He had 30 rebounds across 4 games, but then even that went away. He did have a 20-point game against Denver in early January. That was a blowout loss, though. He shot 8 of 13 from the field, but from that point forward, he only had 3 more double-digit scoring games all season long. He had a couple of different stints where he was off the court due to injury, came back a couple of games into Chris Finch's tenure and was again a member of the rotation, got hurt again, and then was kind of a fringe member of the rotation before he was shut down for the season. He was playing like 3 to 10 minutes a game basically throughout the month, late March, early April, and was shut down for the year with the ankle injury. And for the season, only ended up playing in 34 games. It's really hard to say he made any progress from his rookie year. In fact, I think certainly the per game averages were down because the minutes were down and obviously the games played were down. The shooting percentage was slightly up, but 3-point was down. Free throw was slightly up, but he got to the line less frequently. There's really nothing all too positive to say about Culver's sophomore campaign, just like there really wasn't about his rookie campaign. In fact, he was a better defender as a rookie than he was this year, in my opinion. And he's still only going to be 22 next year. There's certainly some upside. I tend to believe that he's still got some trade value. Granted, he's on a rookie contract. He was the number 6 overall pick. So he's owed $6.4 million next year and then a team option for $8.1 million for 22-23. Unless he takes some big leaps next year, he's not going to get paid those dollars in 22-23. So he probably has some positive trade value right now, but it's not a lot. And that value is going to disappear very quickly if he starts next season on the roster and struggles. There aren't going to be teams that are too excited to trade for him. In theory, though, as a 21-year-old, somebody who should be a good defender, who has the tools to be a good defender, was very good at Texas Tech, obviously, taking them to the Final Four a couple of years ago, there should be some trade value there. And it wouldn't shock me if the Wolves were to move on from him this summer. They talked a lot heading into the 2021 season about his ability to continue improving, his willingness to improve, his attitude, his overall, which isn't something we always see from young players. And the Timberwolves were very open. Gerson Rosas especially was very open about how much Culver is working to improve his game. And we heard about that related to his offseason workouts, et cetera. Not the first time we've heard that about a young player, but at least there is that. He apparently has a great work ethic. He's a good teammate, all those things. So we'll see what happens. It's hard to rank this season as anything but an F for Jarrett Culver. There was no progress shown when he was on the court. He was out due to injury for a significant chunk of the season. And hopefully there's a switch that he can find in the offseason and flip that switch and come into next year as a different player, as a better shooter, a more consistent offensive player, somebody that's more confident with the ball in his hands, a more consistent cutter. We saw him at his best offensively in the open floor and as a cutter, certainly not as a spot-up shooter, and he didn't really make much progress as a playmaker either. Remember, back when Zach LaVine was forced into point guard duties as a rookie under Sam Mitchell, at least there were some, he could shoot the ball still, right? Even though the percentages weren't great, it was very clear he was a scorer at heart. Jarrett Culver was forced into some playmaking, offense. He initiated the offense quite a bit as a rookie last year under Ryan Saunders, but there was never that confidence in his shooting or scoring ability like there was in Zach LaVine's. They're very different players. The only similarity there is that they were both kind of forced into those playmaking duties as rookies. And with LaVine, it seemed more natural than with Jarrett Culver. So hopefully something changes and hopefully I'm proven wrong. But at this moment, there doesn't appear to be much to hang our collective hats on related to Jarrett Culver moving forward. And it would not be a surprise at all to me to see Jarrett Culver traded this offseason. So that's something we'll obviously monitor and see if he does have any trade value, which is certainly a possibility here moving forward. All right, that's all we have for today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening. Of course, we'll be back tomorrow, which is Thursday. We'll talk all things play-in games from Wednesday and anything else Timberwolves that crops up. We'll continue the Timberwolves player review series. And we'll also have a couple of guests on here soon talking about the NBA draft, talking about the Timberwolves season in review. So stay tuned for that. Otherwise, if you're not already following the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, of course, Odyssey, AUDACY, the Odyssey app, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts, please do follow. You can also follow on Twitter at Lockdown T-Wolves and at B Beacon. Again, on Twitter at Lockdown T-Wolves and at B Beacon, 2 B's, 2 E's, CKEN. A reminder that this podcast, Lockdown Wolves, is part of the Lockdown Podcast Network. Of course, the Lockdown Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories, all your favorite teams and all your favorite sports. And lastly, a reminder that this show is brought to you by Locker Room. You can download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Lockdown Rooms. Locker Room is changing the way that we talk sports. That's all we have for you today. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.